Welcome to the Art of Engineering. Today, we're taking a different look at a subject that those of us who are joining me today are familiar with, and that is how custom powder systems and ChargePoint fit into the additive powdered metal battery manufacturing space. And I'd like to start by introducing the three people who have joined me today. Austin Hill is the subject matter expert for custom powder systems for all of the powdered metal additive battery projects that we do at Custom Powder Systems. Scott Heffron is our longtime technical expert who has helped us determine that a lot of what we're doing in this space, we've been doing for a long time in other industries. And Tyler Courtney, welcome. Tyler is the subject matter expert for powder containment for the ChargePoint Technology Company. And I'll let them take it from here. Austin, will you tell us about how custom powder system fits into this industry, a little description of the industries themselves, and then we'll pass it to Tyler.
Yeah. Thanks for having this on. We as custom powder systems, we've got a long standing, knowledge base with things like pharmaceutical and food handling. When it comes to, stainless steel fabrication, equipment fabrication. And as we went along and these new industries have popped up in the battery space and additive manufacturing, we realized that a lot of those, things that we'd learned over the years translate really well into these new areas. And, the key components there being the containment and, explosion-proof equipment, things like that for these powders that are really difficult to otherwise handle unless you have some sort of knowledge base there to be able to rely on. So we've spent a lot of time kind of going back and revisiting the old projects that we've done in these other spaces and pulled the bits and pieces from each one that kind of culminated to make a really good whether it be an IBC, a blender, or, transferring equipment that relates over to the additive and battery world. So when it comes to the additive side, we work really well and alongside a lot of the companies producing the metal powders, the aluminums, titaniums, and other alloys that when they get into the state for additive manufacturing become a real fire hazard. And we have to, handle them in a much different way than a traditional, larger metal powder. And then when we get into the battery side, it's a very similar approach that we're looking at, not so much an explosion risk, but that when they mix these chemicals together, there can be a lot of off-gassing and, things that you wouldn't want to be in the room with if it were to just be exposed to an open air, environment. So both of those scenarios have really come from probably the pharmaceutical background of just making sure that we're keeping everything contained in an inert and oxygen-free environment where we can't have those reactions.
Yeah, and this is Scott. I equate it to pharmaceutical from the standpoint that it all comes down to product purity. The additive and battery markets need that same level of product purity for different reasons, but it's the containment, isolation, and inerting that come with our traditional products that we've used in many different industries really come back to 95% of what we learned through the pharmaceutical world in a regulated industry, which also applies to most of these. It's it still astounds me to this day how many similarities there are between the markets.
So, Scott, will you just briefly tell us what pieces of equipment that CPS Custom Powder Systems has traditionally made that fit into this space?
Yeah, and that is really part of the astounding thing with our entire product line with both companies, ICS and CPS. CPS being the powder handling part of the company, and then ICS being the containment isolation. That with if you look at our product line from start to finish on CPS, we've got IBCs, containers. Those are present in both of these markets. First and foremost, there's our transfer systems for docking this container to different processing or to different containers. Very present and right up Tyler's and Charge Point's specialties. We have the blending systems. It's a little more diverse with at least the additive that some of our blenders are repurposed to aeration devices, basically rolling the material. It goes through the lifting placing with our column lifts. For all different type of purposes, the containers tend to be smaller, but the weights are higher because of the product densities. And the one area, the one product that doesn't cross over as much is our IBC wash stations, because in most of the additive and battery that water is our foe. When we go into the ICS side, our isolators. Containment isolators. There's an extension of that with our isolators become inerting chambers in a lot of cases, but still product purity and containment. Even our downflow booths for the first stages of open transferring apply to this. And the one other product that's probably not as applicable is our lyophilizer carts. It's real special to the aseptic market.
Thank you, Scott. Tyler, will you tell us how ChargePoint fits into all of this for a system?
Yeah, absolutely. First, Denise and the Custom Powders team, I'd like to say thank you for allowing myself to come onto this podcast and represent ChargePoint. Longtime listener, first time attendee, let's call it. So ChargePoint has a very, very rich history in transferring powders. That is what we do. That is our primary focus. ChargePoint manufactures what we refer to as a split butterfly valve system. What this valve enables our end users to do is to contain safe transfer of their powders. Now, when we use the word containment, oftentimes in different industries, we're thinking about operator health and safety, which is a big role in the battery industry. But as Scott and Austin both alluded to, the battery industry in most cases is also looking at trying to maintain their own product and keep the environment out, keep the atmosphere away. Things like moisture ingress, oxidation, these are big concerns in the battery industry that we have seen firsthand. The ChargePoint valve system is capable of moving this powder from one step of the process to the next step of the process, keeping it completely contained. I think one of the biggest advantages to a new end user looking at ChargePoint's equipment is definitely our scalability. We have current battery applications in the United States right now that are working in a range from anywhere from 50 grams all the way up to hundreds of kilos moving this material at a time, whether it's charging into their formulation mixing vessels, or it's harvesting the raw material or pre-weighing this raw material as it arrives on site, the charge point system has a lot of options to help these guys move this material safely, inert. Interestingly enough, when these engineers reach out very early on and we start talking about the process, they're aware of the concerns around the material itself and the environmental impacts of the material, but they don't really realize the benefit of the containment from the operator health and safety side. We start to touch on that, and it just opens up a whole new door of opportunity, and the buy-in is immense. ChargePoint as a company, we're quite nimble. When we get a request like this, what we've also found is that this particular industry, batteries specifically, they are really keen on testing the equipment firsthand. They want us to get our valves on site. They want to put a similar type powder through the valve, and they want to see it firsthand. And in every instance that we've done that with one of these potential new end users, they have become a longtime customer of ours. So we've had a lot of success in this sector for sure.
Throughout the course of a lot of these projects that we've worked on, you know, subjects like NFPA and SIL and various UL ratings have come up, and we've had to become kind of pseudo experts on the various, you know, subsects of those regulations to be able to help guide the customer in making sure that we're building equipment that's, you know, adequately safe.
Yeah. And Austin, those codes we see keep changing and seem to be more frequently. We were aware and was helped to guide a customer that little did they know that Class 2 Division 2 Group E does not exist anymore. That automatically defaults to a Class 2 Div 1 Group E, a much higher level, because NFPA has recategorized that. And for the layman's term, that's 30% of the price of the equipment.
So just for the real novices in the audience, what does NFPA stand for?
The National Fire Protection Agency?
Yeah. That's it.
Did I get that right?
I believe it's agency. I don't ever remember what the A is, but it's National Fire Protection something.
So. It's association. It's association. It's not agency. It's the National Fire Protection Association. Do not mess that up ever again.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. And through all that, we've also had to become, you know, quite aware, or, you know, things are changing quickly with all of that. And so we've had to, you know, kind of keep our head on a swivel and make sure that we're not missing new regulations that are coming out. You know, NFPA 660 is supposed to be coming out next year, and it's going to change even again a lot of these things.
When your customers reach out to you with requirements on their process, how familiar are they with the NFPA guidelines and recommendations? Or are you guys really kind of taking a consultancy role to some degree to suggest, hey, we're going to have to do it this way based on the NFPA guidelines?
It's dependent on the customer. Sometimes we get guys who are in here teaching us stuff about it. Mm-hmm. And other times it's customers who had no idea that, you know, what they're doing even qualifies for, you know, NFPA practices. So, it's a bit of a mixed bag. We've had some really, really good customers who have actually helped kind of guide us and be more familiar and more aware of what's going on. Mm-hmm. And then in other cases, we've been the ones kind of driving that conversation to get them to either bring in a consultant or, you know, somebody who has the knowledge base to really tell them what their facility is going to require.
If you took that experience of the customer coming in and kind of teaching you guys some things about NFPA, and I'll admit, I'm the first one to admit, I've got a lot to learn when it comes to the NFPA. If we were able to just take that and extrapolate upon that and start to have more of these open discussions and forums of learning sessions back and forth between the industry and the equipment suppliers, I just feel like that'd be so beneficial for everyone involved.
Yeah, for sure. And I've seen a little bit of it starting to come through. in various seminars and trade shows and events that, you know, those bodies have always kind of been involved in them, I think, but they're starting to get a lot more vocal and having, you know, longer sessions and really big technical breakdowns. And then that kind of has helped to open the door to having those conversations on a more, you know, individual level.
Yeah, there's a very close dialogue between, I mean, not just necessarily us, but our clients and their suppliers, because we need to guide our clients to give us decisions and rulings how they're going to address certain things in NFPA, because they're ultimately responsible for the decisions at that facility. And it's there's a big cross section of different approaches and how they handle things, and how they not necessarily interpret the code, but where it applies to the code, and how, you know, what they're going to do 10 years from now in that facility. They have to predict that and bring it back to us, that we help guide them on what features and what safety controls we do in our equipment. It's very, very, that's one area that I keep going to parallels between our pharmaceutical history with this, and where we get into the additive and battery markets. The NFPA explosion proof isn't nearly as present in those older markets with pharmaceutical as it is. It's a forefront issue with most of our products or projects in the additive and battery.
Well, and Tyler, thank you for mentioning the safety aspect, because as I've read about what happens in these industries, there are too many instances of fires and safety accidents that have happened around these materials that are used both for the additive and the battery industry. So part of our initial effort with this podcast is to help educate people about what products are out there that we can help solve not just the safety aspect, but getting people out of personal protective equipment as they're making these products.
Yeah, it's a fantastic point. And sometimes it's over missed initially. Eventually, when we get the opportunity to discuss a project with one of these end users, it does come up and it does turn into a huge selling point for the project. Just to give you an example, the typical battery applications that ChargePoint has worked on, and I'm speaking from my own personal experience, we typically will end up highlighting these projects as what we would refer to as OEB4 or OEB5 projects. To try to draw a comparison to the pharma world, this would be looking at really potent drugs, drugs that are used in the preparation of medication for cancer treatment, as an example, or hormone drugs. These are drugs that we really don't want exposed to the operator whatsoever. ChargePoint's approach is to look at a lot of these battery applications in that same light. We go full belts and braces. One thing that the battery industry that we have seen really latch onto with the ChargePoint split butterfly valve is our mechanical interlock systems. The valve system itself is protecting the operators through its use in its most fundamental way, meaning simple things like when the valve is attached to your equipment, it simply won't open until you have followed the proper steps to ensure a contained transfer. It's small things like that that I think maybe we take for granted because we're so used to working with that equipment, that I've found that this industry specifically is really open to that. And they love the idea when they see it and they're like, holy cow, not only is this thing robust, but you mean to tell me it can't be messed up by a brand new operator? And the answer is no. It either works or it does not. And it's a safety mechanical interlock. And so the entire product line of ChargePoint really, you know, is based on safety. And then from there, we've learned of a lot of different ways that it also benefits the process, which, you know, to Scott and Austin's point, the inert transfers, the keeping the moisture out of the process, you know, ChargePoint can definitely lend a hand in all of those.
So, Scott and Austin, where do the ChargePoint pieces fit into a system that we would put together?
I can take the first part of this with a specific example. We have taken a project that was for Potter Metals that was going to be a Class 2 Division 1 explosion-proof application. And through analysis, the charge point valve introduction for a charge position, because it has mechanical interlock, removes the potential for the product for ever being in the room and takes that to a non-explosion proof area. It's the savings were, you know, close to seven digits.
Yeah. I mean, just kind of how we've, you know, presented it to customers, recently and being able to not only contain and provide a cleaner transfer. And like you mentioned, you know, potentially be able to remove a bunch of extremely expensive parts and components by not having to have it as a you know, classified piece of equipment anymore. It's offered in those instances a lot more flexibility for their systems as well, and being able to, you know, have multiple different containers docked to the same transfer with the same means, and give them a lot simpler solution to their, you know, problem.
When Austin and Scott, when you guys first bring up the charge point valve to your customers on this type of application, are they familiar with the technology, or is this something that you're bringing up to them kind of cold turkey and really having to kind of explain to them, so this is what this is, and we think that this might actually fit and benefit you both from a safety standpoint and financially?
I would say it's half and half, you know, but never has anybody in these industries been familiar, like truly familiar with the product. They've maybe heard of it or understand the concept of it, but they don't really realize how it applies to what they're doing.
Right. Yeah. Do you find that that's the same situation when you're discussing custom powder systems or integrated containment solutions equipment as well?
Yes. Yeah, because, you know, again, kind of as we've mentioned before in this, you know, they're figuring out what their systems look like. You know, there's a lot of scaling going on right now. You had mentioned, you know, the difference between 50 grams and, you know, kilos.
100 kilos.
Yeah. You know, they are in a lot of cases working in very small batches right now. And so something that we're really trying to push for, show them that we can help them with, is how to properly scale their production and go from those, you know, in one case, you know, 50 liters or 100 liter containers all the way up to 1,000 or even maybe larger. You know, sometimes we're limited in size just due to the weight of these materials. But
what's the when you're looking at scaling that magnitude like that, what do you think the biggest consideration is for these guys?
So I think in a lot of cases, it's going to be the end production that they're trying to achieve. You know, talking to a couple of customers who are doing, you know, aerospace 3D printing, if they're printing a large part, that part can only come from a single batch of powder. And so if they're, part is bigger than the batch of powder that they can receive, they can't print that part because they can't mix the batches. So being able to go from a 50 liter batch to, you know, potentially maybe a 600 liter batch, that really changes the conversation as to what kind of parts and what size of parts they can print for these really high, you know, purity applications.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we're, I think, a big growth area in discovery for our clients. There is going to be coming down to the transporting of much larger volumes of material that right now most of our clients are shipping these in, you know, small 100 liter or less drum packs of different types that will limit the, you know, it basically limits it to that batch size, even though it maybe came from a bigger batch that, if they get larger containers, our equipment is being used to integrate multiple smaller batches as they scale up in a blending system to make it uniform throughout this large volume of material. So when we get to a point with clients 3D printing much larger parts, that we can be shipping in larger volumes in IBCs or other transportable devices like that.
Yeah. From ChargePoint's perspective, we haven't had a lot. We've had some, but not a lot of discussions at these really large scales that we're kind of thinking about. It's interesting. From an R&D standpoint, there is so much super interesting stuff happening in the battery industry right now from, I don't even want to try to say the terms because I'm not an absolute expert in battery. I'm an expert in powder transfer. But what I can tell you is that the industry from an R&D standpoint is very much interested in containment. And I oftentimes wish I had more time with the customers where I could ask, you know, what is this going to look like when we scale this thing up? If they crack the code, let's say, on the battery that will be used in everything moving forward, because all of these companies have a different means and a different way. We've got solid state versus lithium ion versus you name it, it's out there. And I just wonder what this thing's going to look like as it scales up. ChargePoint, oftentimes on these processes, we find ourselves, like I said, in the formulation charging, actually charging the mixing vessels. And boy, if those things go, you know, full scale, I'd be interested to see what that looks like. I know from ChargePoint's perspective on a containment, on the containment side, as we scale up from, you know, 50 grams or a couple kilos to the scale that we're kind of envisioning, there is a lot of considerations that we have to take into play.
So I have on my list of things to ask about, is cross-contamination also a player in these types of systems?
Oh, yeah, that's huge for them. As much, I keep referring back to pharmaceutical and nutraceutical, but it's as important to them, if not the other one, other clients. You know, I've had our clients say in the additive area that when if their products fail, planes drop out of the sky. With pharmaceutical, you know, lives are threatened if there's contamination. It's just as important.
Absolutely, it is. It's so important. I think one of the ways that ChargePoint has been able to come in and talk with these folks about cross-contamination and really help them understand, why are we even looking at a split butterfly valve? How would that help with cross-contamination? And we draw this back to the idea that, well, we're able to contain this product so much so between process step A and process step B. Our containment level, we're talking, you know, less than a grain of dust floating in the air. If we're able to contain to that level, then the idea that there would be any sort of cross-contamination is almost non-existent. And it's interesting, the cross-contamination concern is always present on the front end. And once we start to establish what the ChargePoint split valve system is capable of, the concern is almost like the box has been ticked very early in the process. It's like, yep, okay. As long as we have a ChargePoint valve on the bottom of a custom powders bin, as an example, we know that there won't be cross-contamination between bin A and bin B because it's been contained.
Exactly.
So let's expand on that just a little bit. Tell me the difference between using batch versus vacuum transfer, and I may not be asking that question correctly.
Yeah, I can probably weigh in a little bit, but Scott would be your authority on it probably. But, really when we're talking about the purity standpoint, doing a batch production like we do with our IBCs, it allows for all of, your material in a certain batch to be contained within a single vessel. So whether you're blending or storing or transporting that material, there's no chance of there being a cross-contamination event, up until we transfer out of that bin, which is, again, where the charge point valve would come into play, and that we eliminate that that issue of contamination versus, vacuum transfer or some other means of a continuous transfer. You have issues where those systems are really difficult to clean. And so there's always the risk when you're changing from one material or one batch to the next that there's residual material still in those systems. When we do a batch or a batch in an IBC, that vessel is taken offline and cleaned somewhere else outside of the process. So we're removing the contamination issue by taking that piece of equipment out of the equation when it's time to clean.
Yeah. And another consideration there is generally with a vacuum transfer system, most cases you're looking at much larger scale volumes of product than what our clients are doing in either battery or additive. And in that case it would be a dedicated, ideally be a dedicated transfer system or process system for one product to get around all the potential cross-contamination points with pneumatic transfer. In both of these cases, most of the products we get involved with are oxygen sensitive, or even pyrofluoric, where the where oxygen is its full. That with batch handling with an IBC system, you have much limited exposure points to the atmosphere than you would with a pneumatic transfer system, where you've got feet and yards and meters of piping and leak points. But there definitely is a place for them, and it usually comes down to scale of the product. Another step away from it that I haven't seen this market go into just because of the volumes is continuous manufacturing that is caught on a little bit, still being struggled with in pharmaceutical, in my opinion, where the you run into the same type of issues that pharma struggles with is the lot traceability, because now you don't have defined volumes of material segregated from each other. You're using timestamps and where the product was in the system at the time, which is for pharma, it's a regulatory issue. For battery and additive, it's probably a little more of just product tracking and uniformity.
Thank you. I'd like to direct our audience to two different websites. The one for custom powder is custom-powder.com, and ChargePoint is thechargepoint.com, where you can see the types of equipment we've been talking about, and at ChargePoint in particular, that valve. But just for a bit of history, this whole batch blending came about in the 40s when fertilizer was being commercially developed to feed the world. And the whole batch blending system was developed at the Tennessee Valley Authority years ago, probably in the 40s. And it's amazing to me that all this same equipment that you can see on both those websites is primarily being used in the same way in all these different industries. Well, I would like to thank Scott Heffron, Austin Hill, and Tyler Courtney for joining me on the Art of Engineering podcast, because this truly gets to the art of engineering. Thank you for joining us again on the Art of Engineering. I'd love it if you would share this episode with others in our industry and encourage them to subscribe wherever they get podcasts. In the meantime, we'd appreciate your 5-star review and would love to hear any comments or suggestions. Until next time, I'm Denise McIntosh from Custom Powder Systems, online at custom-powder.com.